This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, this is Terry Malloy here to read The Week, the best of U.S. and international media. This is the March 22nd, 2024 edition. All you need to know about everything that matters. And on the cover this week, we have a picture of Joe Biden with an open can of spinach. Show of strength. Has an energized Biden proved he's got what it takes to win? In our talking points this week, a new MAGA extreme with Mark Robinson. Main stories, Congress cracks down on TikTok. And people, her battle with body shaming, Kate Winslet. And we begin with our feature story, Biden and Trump set for the 2020 rematch. What happened? President Biden and Donald Trump locked down their party's nominations for the presidency this week, setting the stage for a bitter campaign and the first presidential rematch since 1956. Both candidates' nominations were all but assured before they swept the primaries in Georgia, Mississippi, and Washington State on March 12th. But the results crystallized in a shift into full campaign mode that began last week when Biden targeted Trump in a combative State of the Union address, launched a $30 million ad campaign, and stumped in Georgia, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Trump is running a campaign of resentment, revenge, and retribution that threatens the very idea of America, said Biden, who trails Trump 38% to 40% in the new USA Today poll. Campaigning in Georgia, Trump mocked Biden's stutter. On social media, he promised his first acts as president would include closing the border and freeing the January 6 hostages being wrongfully imprisoned. Setting out his policy vision for a prospective second term, Biden unveiled a $7.3 trillion budget that would expand social services while proposing some $5 trillion in new taxes on corporations and top earners. It would establish 12 weeks of paid family medical leave for eligible workers, provide universal pre-K, and restore a pandemic-era child tax credit that slashed child's poverty. The budget has no chance of passing a Republican-controlled House, but outlines an agenda that will animate Biden's campaign. House Speaker Mike Johnson called the budget, quote, yet another glaring reminder of this administration's insatiable appetite for reckless spending, unquote. What the editorial said. These are not normal times, said the Philadelphia Inquirer, and this is not a normal election. At 81, Biden may be old, but he's an honorable public servant who will respect the role of law and uphold the Constitution. Trump is a loose cannon who tried to overturn the 2020 election, faces four criminal indictments, and has been found liable for sexual abuse. If reelected, he'll pursue a radical agenda that will upend core beliefs in American governance, foreign policy, and the rule of law. It's up to the voters to spare the nation that dire fate. Biden's budget shows that Bank Breaker Joe is still at it, said the New York Post. He's happy to promise the moon to buy his way to victory. All fiscal responsibility be damned. The budget is larded with massive green spending and giveaways to student loan recipients and first-time homebuyers, paid for with punitive taxes on corporations and the wealthy. These massive handouts would further fuel inflation, forcing the Fed to keep interest rates high. In other words, he's promising more of the same, which should give every American the chills. What the columnist said. Here comes the rematch many Americans desperately wanted to avoid, said Lisa Lehrer, in the New York Times. Historians have to reach back to Harrison versus Cleveland in the 1880s to find a parallel for such widespread apathy toward the two candidates. In a recent Times poll, voters with a negative view of the election outnumber those excited or hopeful by 4-1. Meanwhile, so many voters dislike both Trump and Biden that they now have their own political moniker, double haters. Many such voters backed Trump challenger Nikki Haley, said Stephanie Kelly in Reuters. And where they'll turn now is a looming question. By drawing moderate anti-Trump Republicans, Haley proved to be a force in swing states. Even after dropping out, she still pulled nearly 78,000 votes in Georgia, which Trump lost to Biden by a quarter of a percentage point in 2020. Historical precedent suggests that most of these Republicans will return to the GOP fold and vote for Trump, but many insist to pollsters that they won't. Those voters could be crucial to sending either man back to the White House. As Americans bemoan two flawed and unpopular choices, the candidates themselves face a tough road, said Stephen Peoples in the Associated Press. Given his age, Biden must assure a skeptical electorate he can still handle the world's most important job and woo those unhappy with his handling of the economy and the war in Gaza. Trump faces 4 criminal trials that could yield decades in prison, and his hard right policy proposals will be thrust into the spotlight. Ahead of both lies an 8-month grind that will almost certainly deepen the nation's searing political and cultural divides. House passes potential TikTok ban. What happened? The House this week passed legislation that would force TikTok's Chinese owners to sell their stake in the social media company or see it removed from app stores in a bipartisan rebuke of a hugely popular app regarded by many in Washington as a national security threat. The Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act passed 352-65, giving TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, 6 months to sell. Lawmakers fear China could use its intelligence laws to force ByteDance to share American users' data or control what content users are shown. TikTok has previously suppressed videos of Hong Kong protests and Uyghur forced labor. The bill, backed by President Biden, still faces uncertain prospects in the Senate. Taking action against TikTok has been discussed in Washington since 2020, when Donald Trump signed an executive order, blocked in court, calling for a ban or sale. This time, though, Trump has campaigned against a ban, arguing it would boost Facebook, which he blames for his 2020 loss. If you get rid of TikTok, Facebook and Zuckerschmuck will double their business, he said. TikTok mobilized its audience of about 170 million Americans to flood Congress's phone lines. Representatives received menacing messages, with a surge of calls overloading some offices' phone lines. Many callers sounded too young to vote, but the strategy appears to have backfired, leading to fury in Congress, with the bill's authors calling the flood of calls a massive propaganda campaign. What the columnist said: despite support from both parties, this ban is a bad idea, said the Washington Post in an editorial. Yes, TikTok poses a privacy and an information threat, but there's no concrete evidence that either of these two threats has materialized. Instead of assessing TikTok's dangers, the House created a mechanism giving the president broad power to designate other apps as impermissibly subject to foreign control. We need a higher bar for dictating to Americans where they can and can't express themselves. TikTok's campaign was a disaster, said Noah Rothman in National Review. TikTok sliced its youthful users in Washington in a campaign of emotional blackmail. This was a well-funded effort to hold America's children hostage, proving to lawmakers that kids are in the throes of a deep dependency. Those young users made the case against TikTok better than its detractors ever could. Trump is one of the few backers TikTok has now, and there's no secret why, said Matthew Yeglesias in Slow Boring. Conservative hedge fund manager Jeff Yass, whose fund owns a stake in TikTok that could be worth $15 billion, visited Trump and threatened to stop funding Republicans who voted against the app. That explains the former president's corrupt flip-flopping on the issue. The whole point of having a democracy is that the U.S. makes policy decisions based on ideas about the public interest. But Trump, as transparently for sale, and foreign authoritarian regimes know it. Our briefing this week, COVID's toll in the classroom. The pandemic upended the education of a generation of children. Can they still catch up? Are many kids lagging academically? Evidence shows that millions of students lost crucial ground during the pandemic. From 2019 to spring of 2022, when all U.S. schools had returned to in-person learning, the average student in third through eighth grade had dropped the equivalent of half a grade level in math and a third of a grade level in reading. No state saw gains in those areas, and in the worst affected communities, such as Richmond, Virginia, and New Haven, Connecticut, researchers found that schools would have to teach 150% of a typical year's material for three straight years to catch up. An assessment known as Nation's Report Card underscored those problems. In the 2022-23 school year, average math scores for 13-year-olds sank to their lowest level since 1990, while average reading scores plunged to a level not seen since 1975. Nationwide, schools are pushing to get students back on track by hiring extra tutors, adding school days, and speeding through the curriculum. But many of those efforts are possible only because of the $190 billion in aid that Congress allocated for K-12 schools in 2020 and 2021. Those federal funds will expire in September. We seem to have lost the urgency in this crisis, said Karen Lewis, a researcher at student assessment group NWEA. It is problematic for the average kid. It is catastrophic for the kids who were hardest hit. What caused this learning loss? Some 50 million school children were sent home in early 2020 as public schools shuttered to curb the spread of COVID. Those closures undoubtedly set back students' learning. Kids typically lose a month or two of academic growth during summer vacation, as did the on-the-fly adoption of remote teaching. Stuck at home in front of screens and isolated from their friends and teachers, students of all ages struggled to focus during video chat lessons. Engaging students over Zoom was nearly impossible, said Christina Faulkner, a high school teacher in Indiana. Even good kids or polite kids were hard to engage. Finding online lessons dull and easy to skip, many students stopped logging on and then lost the habit of attending school. Some 14 million K-12 students are now classed as chronically absent, meaning they miss at least 3 weeks of school a year, a number that has nearly doubled since 2019. But prolonged school shutdowns can't explain the entirety of COVID-era learning loss, because states that quickly resumed in-person learning, such as Arizona, saw testing declines similar to those of states that stayed remote longer, such as California. What else could be to blame? The sheer stress and emotional upheaval of the pandemic. A study led by researchers at Harvard and Stanford universities found that test scores declined more in areas where the COVID death rate was higher, in poor school districts, and among Black and Hispanic students, and in communities where adults reported feeling depressed and anxious. Teachers also experienced a surge in pandemic-era stress, leading many to exit the profession. 300,000 public school educators and other staff left the field from 2020 to 2022. That's added to the national teacher shortage and made it harder for schools to offer more one-on-one time for struggling students. Some educators say they left because student behavior deteriorated sharply after the pandemic. I was a ninth grade teacher, and my students were seventh graders emotionally, said Ryan Higgins, who quit his job teaching world geography in Texas in 2022. I felt like I didn't even get to teach. What's being done to help students? Congress mandated that school districts spend at least 20% of federal relief funds addressing learning loss, but some districts have allocated a much larger share for academic recovery. Weakley County in Tennessee, a poor rural district, put more than 75% of its relief funds toward bringing students up to speed, pairing them with experienced tutors twice a week, and hiring social workers and teachers' assistants to help in classrooms. Its math and reading scores have since fully rebounded. In Birmingham, Alabama, Alabama schools now offer optional instructional sessions during fall, winter, and spring breaks. And more than a quarter of students participate in them. In Delano, California, a mostly Hispanic area, saw that absenteeism soared post-2019. Students now write down how they're feeling each week, helping teachers identify obstacles to learning. If a child is not mentally okay, no matter how good my lessons is, my students will not learn, said Maria Seya, a fourth grade teacher. Is any progress being made? The Stanford and Harvard-led team found that from spring 2022 to spring 2023, elementary and middle school students recovered an average of about a third of what they lost in math and a quarter of what they lost in reading. That's a remarkable achievement, the researchers said. But those averages mask the uneven nature of the recovery. The typical affluent district is now about a fifth of a grade level behind where it was in 2019, while the typical poor district is half a grade behind. Inequality is also widening within districts, with students from poor homes gaining ground half as fast as their rich peers. The worry, Stanford professor Sean Reardon said, is that inequality is getting baked in. That could set up a slew of future problems. If learning losses aren't recovered today, students will earn 6% less over their lives than students educated pre-pandemic, according to a study by Stanford economist Eric A. Hanushek, costing the U.S. economy $28 trillion. This is a 5-alarm fire, said former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. But most elected officials aren't even discussing it. Even kindergartners feel the loss. Pandemic learning loss didn't just affect kids who were in school. It also hit those who have only recently entered the education system. Compared with the class of 2019, children who started kindergarten in 2023 were about 2 percentage points less likely to be at grade level in both math and reading, according to testing company Curriculum Associates. These data show that post-pandemic recovery is still an uphill battle for millions of students nationwide, said Kristen Huff, an assessment expert at Curriculum Associates. Why would kids who were in diapers for the worst of COVID also be experiencing learning loss? Experts speculate that declining enrollment in pre-K education early in the pandemic might have played a part, as could the youngsters receiving less socialization and stimulation in their first years. Countless play dates, visits with relatives, and family outings were disrupted by isolation requirements, and many parents were distracted by a host of COVID-era challenges, such as working from home, a shortage of childcare, and responsible health issues after catching COVID. Our best columns in the U.S. this week. The problem isn't political polarization, by Jennifer Rubin in the Washington Post. A running cliche in the mainstream media is that the U.S. is polarized into two extreme camps, said Jennifer Rubin. This is simply untrue. Democrats have some far-left elements, but President Biden and the party's congressional leaders have repeatedly proven they are willing to move to the center to get bipartisan support. Not so the Republicans, who have become radicalized and unmovable. Republicans frequently buried a tough bipartisan border bill they helped forge because Donald Trump feared it would be effective. They overwhelmingly opposed the infrastructure bill and the CHIPS Act to help fund semiconductor factories in the U.S., and refused to convict an impeached Trump for inciting a violent insurrection. They are denying military aid critical to Ukraine's survival and siding with Russian dictator Vladimir Putin. GOP House Speaker Mike Johnson is a Christian nationalist who thinks he was chosen by God and takes direction from the Bible, not the Constitution. Virtually every Republican official now is endorsing Donald Trump, the most extreme racist candidate since the Civil War, who warns that immigrants are poisoning the blood of the country. That's not polarization. That's one party going off the deep end. Intimidating small-town newspapers, by Paul Farrell in The Atlantic. Local journalism, ever-deteriorating financial condition, has left small-town newspapers vulnerable to official intimidation, said Paul Farhi. When faced with potentially unflattering investigatory news stories, corrupt political officials often bully the press because they believe they can get away with it. Too often, they do. Their strong-arm tactics occasionally make national headlines, such as when Marion Kahn, police chief, ordered a raid of newsroom of the Marion County Record and the home of its publisher last August, which so upset the 98-year-old co-owner, she died the next day. In another recent case in Alabama, county district attorney charged a reporter and the publisher of the Atmore News with violating a state secrecy law. Most of the roughly 1,000 reports of arrests, intimidation, and physical attacks on local journalists since 2017 have flown under the radar. Small-town weeklies struggle to survive, are easily prey for optimistic or opportunistic, or aggressive elected officials, because they don't have pockets deep enough for a prolonged legal battle. This has a chilling effect on investigatory and watchdog journalism. The true cost of media intimidation often consists of stories never pursued. What Trump Wants in a Running Mate by Noah Rothman in the National Review. Who will Donald Trump pick as his vice presidential nominee? Asked Noah Rothman. The usual criteria for picking a running mate will take a back seat to Trump's central requirement, quote, someone who will do what Mike Pence would not, unquote. Every Republican hoping to be picked knows this, which is why they are refusing to say Pence did the right thing in refusing Trump's demand that he reject the election results in several swing states. In recent CNN interviews, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum and South Carolina Senator Tim Scott repeatedly declined to say whether they agreed with Pence's decision to follow the Constitution. Ohio Senator J.D. Vance blatantly pandered to Trump, saying Pence should have allowed multiple slates of electors from closely contested states and let Congress choose the winner. New York Representative Elise Stefanik, another full-on MAGA supporter, said that in 2024, she would count states' electoral votes only if they are constitutional. This means the Republican ticket this year will consist of not one, but two 2020 election deniers who will reject the 2024 results if Trump loses, triggering more riots and violence. What might sound like political suicide, but that's just how Trump wants it. Our health and science this week. Extra COVID vaccines don't hurt. A German man who claimed to have gotten 217 COVID vaccination is doing just fine, reports Time. The 62-year-old from Magdeburg said he got the shots over about 2.5 years and never had any side effects, although authorities only confirmed he received 130 shots over 9 months. German officials suspect the man was selling his extra vaccination cards to people who didn't want to get vaccinated, though they didn't file charges. After reading of his case, scientists at the University of Erlangen-Nuremberg studied the man to see how all the shots affected his immune system, comparing him with 29 people who'd received 3 shots. They had thought that his immune system might be overwhelmed, resulting in a weaker response. Instead, he had a stronger response. His antibody and effector T cell levels were 6 times higher than the average in the control group. His memory T cells, which recall viruses already seen, were on par with those of the control group. It's not clear in which direction the 200 vaccines would go, said lead author Killian Schober. But ultimately, his immune system was either positively or not or negatively affected. Donuts make you uglier. Eating refined carbohydrates and sugary drinks for breakfast make people look less attractive, reports The Guardian. To compare the looks of people who are refined or whole grain carbs, researchers from Francis University of Montpellier took a group of 52 women and 52 men between the ages of 20 and 30. Half were given high glycemic meal of refined carbs, a baguette with jam, orange, or apple juice, and coffee or tea with sugar. Well, that looks like this is it for this week. This is Terry Malloy wishing you all a great week ahead, and I will be back next Sunday to read the week.